Okay, this is session 8, side 4, July 10th, 2006. Continuing there, the Morse code of the telegraph, you can, it's electric writing, graph, you know, telegraph. You can communicate and do things that way, but then what if you can hear electrically? And that brings in the gramophone. And then what if you can see electrically? That's the silent movies. And then, now when you're doing the telegraph, it's one person signaling to someone else. It's point to point.
Which is all you need for one bank to do accounting transactions with another bank.
Right, so you still have, you know, that is when the big robber barons happen. You know, the Morgans, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the latter half of the 19th century, they create their huge monopolies. Because there's still room for visual space, the graph part of telegraph, the writing, the visual space of Gutenberg legacy is still there, but it's starting to be stressed out by the communal effect of the tele part of the word telegraph. So when, now here's the full communistic effect happens not with the telephone, because a few people can talk, you can have a party line, a few people are listening, so it's more than one-to-one like the telegraph. But when you bring in the radio and millions of people can hear the same thing at the same time, that's mass communication.
Mm-hmm.
That's mass. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's instant, involving millions of people. Immediate tribal stuff starts happening. And then when you can see en masse, for example, when you went to your silent movies, it was just you saw the movies, you and your little group. And you could say, well, there was 40 theaters in North America were seeing it. Yeah, that's puny, and it doesn't stay there. You're there for a couple hours, and then it's gone. But once you have radio, it's 24/7, and everybody's inside. So that's why radio was the first really collective post-biological environment.
Yeah, plus so, it was a collective format. Pretty much everybody was hearing the same thing at the same time. So if you pissed off the masses, you had a problem. Because if the masses rise up, you're in trouble. Today, not everybody's hearing the same thing at the same time. Everybody's hearing whatever frequency they want to tune into. Everybody's disenfranchised, and there's no collectivity to rise up against anything.
That's right, and we retrieved 18th century visual space values called neoconservatism, Adam Smith free trade policies. The surface retrieval of that kind of visual fragmented effect of the Gutenberg era was retrieved by the digital era. But before we get to that, we have the radio is the tribal communism and a discarnate body, and then you can see. And you not only can see via television, you can kinetically move and surf on an inner trip with the television. So television completes the electric mutations from the telegraph to television. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's refinements, there's additions, and making totally comprehensive, finally, with television, the whole sensory system. So, yes, you have the electric effect with the telegraph, but it's going to be built on in the inventory I just went through, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just ran through this. The stages are pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
McLuhan says in Counterblast that media evolve not necessarily chronologically. Interesting statement, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the form they are. And some parts come before the other.
Mm-hmm.
So the next quote from JC, that's the code for, it says, this is an article written published in summer 1981, so it was one of the last articles McLuhan wrote, and he did it with Bruce Powers. And the article is Ma Bell Minus the Nantucket Gam, or the Impact of High-Speed Data Transmission, published in the Journal of Communication. So he would have done this.
This is 1981, so now we're really moving forward.
Yeah, and he would have, he collapsed in September 79, so this is written in 78 or 79, just before he had his stroke. And the quote is, in light of all that we just said over the last 10 minutes, everyone will be involved in role-playing, including those few elitists who interpret and or manage large-scale data patterns and thus control the functions of a speed-of-light society. Now, this is talking about the bankers and the conspiracy and the Trilateral Commission and the Illuminati and all those things that people project Gutenberg values on and don't understand that those guys don't have that kind of power. The power that the Tetrad managers have is stated in this sentence. Everyone will be involved in role-playing. There will be no private identity inside the TV landscape, or then even into the...
What does that mean, no private identity inside the TV?
Private identity is when you present yourself in public, you have a name, a job, an identity, age group, a class level, and you fit into a visually organized hierarchy, and you stay in that level, and your integrity is invested in that, and you don't leave it, you don't drop it, you don't lie, you have to be honest, you maintain and match with your visual identity and the society, the visually biased society around.
Mm-hmm.
When the chemical body disappears, I was describing the chemical body on a visual bias level there.
Yeah.
When you get into the post-biological, post-chemical body situation, you are presenting an image. Your chemical body is not all that you are. It's your interaction with the radio and TV landscape, which we say is very hard to describe, we said 2 hours ago, that landscape. But it is you responding to the patterns of information that you're drinking in 24/7. And adopting a position to it. And there's all kinds of changing patterns, so you've got to change your relationship to that all the time. So having a stable, honest identity is pretty hard to do in the 20th century. So people recognize that you have an image and that it's a role in the relationship of your chemical body to the radio or TV body. So role-playing is what happens. It begins in the radio TV era, but it really gets going with the global theater inside the satellite environment. But within that global theater, there needs to be a centralized expression of the community's need to know what is the common consensus here. So advertising does that. But on the level of management and saying where the society is for managing its resources and its relationships to other societies, you need an elite. And this is the National Security Agency, an elite who interprets and or manages large-scale data patterns and thus controls the functions of a speed-of-light society. So part of managing large-scale data patterns is in 1947, you bring in the National Security Act and you say, you, members of the National Security Agency, have the right and are protected in lying to the fictional American public or that puny American meme. And you will be playing a role when you're head of the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be able to tell us what happened at Roswell, mm-hmm. or what happened at the Kennedy assassination, or what happened in the U-2 flight, or what happened with the Iran-Contra. Any major news event, the interpretation of that by the word that makes the market, which is the White House, is another way of saying that those few elitists who interpret or manage large-scale data patterns and thus control the functions of a speed of light society. That's like saying, did we invent cold fusion yet? No, we haven't invented it. We haven't discovered it yet. So we're not going to change the way our society is functioning.
Now, the thing that's interesting to me is that you have the chain of, you have the hierarchy of news people. You have the... what's the organization you just referred to?
The National Security Agency.
You have the National Security Agency. But then they're interfacing with the editors of news shows who are interfacing with anchor people who are interfacing with the man on the street, the journalist.
Now, who are interfacing with advertising pollster guys, too.
Yeah. But how come the man on the street journalist who goes out to investigate these stories... presumably he's an intelligent person, or he wouldn't have had to compete for his job. If he investigates these stories and starts finding out the truth of the matter, how does he maintain his own sense of personal integrity if he realizes that his stories are not being, he cannot communicate the truth to the American public because it's being edited all the way up the chain to the top where you have the, you know...
the management of the big the patterns.
The management of the patterns, yeah. I mean, how...
Well, let me answer that. Is that there have been many books since the 80s, and usually say this came in under Reaganism, is that journalism has collapsed. You've heard about the complaints of Walter Cronkite about the collapse of journalism. Mm-hmm. All these are symptoms of the very issue you're talking about.
But there are hundreds or thousands or millions of journalists on the street collecting stories. How could they all be seduced into not telling the story?
Because their puny little chemical body needs to eat.
Uh-huh.
And you are expendable, so you will follow the party line, the media profile, so that you can function and be involved in the society.
Mm-hmm.
It's tribal involvement, and if you don't follow the tribal consensus, then you're irrelevant. Now, that was the way it was in the 50s and 60s. It got real complicated with cable TV and the fragmentation of the TV landscape, and then the chip body. And so that's why...
Let me interrupt before we get into this next development of this particular aspect, because these people, do they all know that they're lying and not telling the truth, or do they, through some stimulus response behavioral conditioning, just they're steered away, they're conditioned not to look at certain stories because those stories are considered to be stupid, and so they just don't investigate them? I don't quite understand. I mean,
let's hold it there. There's a lot of things you're saying, and let's look at some McLuhan principles. Electric media demands participation. A story wears out within two days.
Yeah.
You need new content. You've got the whole population, what we call the super audience, which is more powerful than the National Security Agency, which is consuming media and requires new stories. And that very mandate means it doesn't matter about whether your story was true or not, and you have qualms of conscience about whether you got the truth out or not. That story comes and goes. You got to get another story. You got to keep pumping out food. You're a virtual slave. It's worse than the cotton plantations. You have a comfortable office, but you got to work your ass off day in, day out. Now, that might be easier than working on a chain gang, working in a coal mine, but there's a lot of mental pressure, and so the majority of Americans are on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
On Prozac, all kinds of drugs. It's gotten more extreme over the last 30 years. These people operate in the information society. We're all feeding on each other, digesting each other. And so that's the context we're operating in. So one little puny story. Now look at how Joyce presented this in Finnegan's Wake. One story that you never get to the bottom of, presented in all these different media. He laid out this whole pattern that you're talking about in 70 years ago. And so in the context of information, the TV body and what it needs, you see that you would submit to that. The powers, the media environments are way beyond any little particulars that your chemical body has anxiety over.
I'm just wondering if the man on the street reporter is even conscious of the fact that he's not really investigating the truth because he's conditioned not to look in not to look for it or something.
Okay, they weren't aware of it in the 50s, 60s, but as media became fragmented, and then as people started to live more and more in a global society in the 70s and 80s, they no longer felt they lived in the United States anymore. There's all kinds of popular expressions of this. This ain't the country used to be, blah, blah, blah. Reagan retrieved the image of pretending that, we do have that image back. The point is, Art Bell and those kind of shows, the cynicism of putting down the government and saying they're lying to us and all that was a natural awareness as a product of the fragmentation of the TV body and then the chip body, so that the newspaper scale, the literate body, was so puny that people were moved into a level of what they call massive cynicism, which really was just, the newspaper body has no reality anymore. I'm in the TV body, and I'm going to monitor how they're lying to me. And I know they're lying to me, and I'm going to read blogs on the chip world that describe the details of the lies. Oh, and then I read a blog, and I found out this story lied. Then I tune in the next day and find out about the next lie. It's the chip body monitoring the TV body. And the average person doesn't know how to say what I'm saying. They just instinctively have attitudes that they've been mutated into by these changing landscapes.
Mm-hmm.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you end up with the next statement from Take Today, 1972. The automated presidential surrogate is the superlative nobody. That's the perfect expression of every president we've had since Eisenhower. But, I mean, it's now celebrated. We, with George Bush, are celebrating the automated presidential surrogate as a supposed nobody. He's more nobody than someone else, so he's the greatest guy in terms of image.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll reelect him.
Mm-hmm.
So we've laid out some interesting processes here on this page.
Mm-hmm.
Basic sidelining of owners. Owners not interested in content. The fact that you don't live in outer space. Then the economics consequences of that. Then the Cold War consequences of China and Russia and the collapse of geography and ideology. Then the discarnate, individualized, superhumanized chip body scale, which leads to everyone will be involved in role-playing, including those few elitists who interpret and or manage large-scale data patterns and thus control the function of a speed light of society. Most content of our TV landscape is myriads of topics, millions of shows.
Mm-hmm.
But human beings have a doubleness. They have a particular attention, and then they have to have the big picture that they're operating inside of, sort of like a frame,
mm-hmm.
even though that smacks of a visual bias metaphor. But they have the particular, and then what I'm inside of.
Mm-hmm.
So in determining what we're inside of, that's what McLuhan's referring to about the tetrad managers of the large-scale data patterns.
Mm-hmm.
They interpret and manage large-scale data patterns.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones to say there is an election, there is a president, there is the United States, there are immigrants. These basic chemical body and newspaper landscape images.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's interesting, because I was watching the local news yesterday, and they were reporting on this woman who drowned in the Willamette River, and they were reporting on some guy that got drunk and got in a car accident and killed somebody. And, you know, I pretty much trust the local news. I think, yeah, you know, they're telling me what's going on in my community, and I think I can trust, you know, that data is not being manipulated. But it's, like you say, the large-scale patterns which create the context in which all the little mini-stories, which maybe have journalistic integrity. You know, the little mini stories have all the journalistic integrity, but they're being reported within a context of journalistic stories that are being massaged from the top down.
They're being reported in the context of the TV and chip body landscapes, which cannot be imaged. And that's why you don't say Americans get dumber and dumber. Is that the eternal issues of abortion, capital punishment, are always going to be the themes, because they're very hard to resolve because of religions and personal preferences and morality and all those things. Very hard to tell when the fetus was born and all that stuff. These are the eternal issues of the local elections, and they are maintained by the large-scale data pattern of saying we speak English, and this is the language we're talking, and English is important. Yet the Android meme does not speak in English. We don't live in an English environment on the TV body and chip body landscape.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why the large-scale data patterns are a fantasy. But if you go to the next quote, which is from an op-ed that McLuhan and Barry Nevitt, the co-authors of Take Today, wrote for the New York Times in 1974, it's called A Media Approach to Inflation. Now listen to this in terms of juggling the four bodies and juggling the big patterns. Beginning, Henry Kissinger, and he's the one of these large-scale data pattern managers, one of the quote-unquote elitists. Henry Kissinger seems to be the current triggerman in this planetary game among the intervals of the first, second, third, and fourth worlds, the first world being the industrialized West, the second being Russian socialism, the third the non-industrialized lands, and the fourth the electric world that has gone around the rest, becoming the primum mobile of inflation in all the rest. That tells you about the four levels that we're managing, and within that interaction of those four worlds, you're going to have some pretty simple large-scale data patterns like, no, there are no UFOs, no, the crop circles are nothing, no, there's no cure for cancer, no, we haven't solved the oil crisis. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You got to keep it real simple when you get 6 billion people and their bodies, which could be the trillion bodies. We could say you now have a trillion bodies. Because how could you visualize a chemical body in relation to the TV and the digital landscape? So that is the page of McLuhan, page 11, that we've been going through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I laid them out carefully. The top of the page is early McLuhan. And then we move through the political and catastrophic implications of the continuing imploded nature of information society, moving into the post-information society, and ending at the bottom with the juggling of a tetrad manager's view of the four worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You want to read the Kissinger quote?
You just read it, didn't you?
Yeah, you read it. Just review it for us.
Oh, okay. Henry Kissinger seems to be the current trigger man in this planetary game along the intervals of the first, second, third, and fourth worlds. The first world being the industrialized West, the second being Russian socialism, the third, the non-industrialized lands, and the fourth, the electric world that has gone around the rest, becoming the premium mobile of inflation in all the rest. I think that last sentence, the word premium mobile is italicized, that last sentence is worth a little investigation at how the electric world, which has gone around the other three, has created this inflation of all the rest.
Yes, and inflation is, he used to say, in this article that we're quoting from the op-ed, he explained in there that you take a dollar bill and move it at the speed of light, it acquires infinite mass. Anything in the electric TV body landscape acquires infinite mass. This is E equals MC squared.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I understand if you take any physical mass and move it to the speed of light, it attains infinite mass. But information doesn't have mass, so I'm not quite sure how a dollar has infinite mass. It doesn't have any mass to start with. It's just a dollar.
Yes,
it's information.
You take that old visual medium and move it into the tactile medium, which can't be visualized.
Mm.
It starts to expand and crack and contract to feel the walls, to feel its own boundaries. And it won't find any boundaries, just like we can't visualize the TV body.
No.
And so therefore it smears over and looks like an image of a supernova going into a black hole.
Right.
These astrophysics imagery actually just reflecting the interplay between the chemical body and the TV body in their exaggerated warp speed.
Well, here's the trouble I have with the concept. You move a dollar at the speed of light, it attains infinite mass, but it doesn't attain infinite buying potential. It still has a dollar's worth of buying potential.
That's why you have inflation. You got to have a lot of dollars.
Yeah.
Because you're filling in. It's like the wheelbarrow in Germany, 1923, running around with a wheelbarrow of dollar bills to get a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
The point is, it cannot be visual space cannot translate into tactile space. But we insist on having the electronic environment going around the old visual environment. And the tension and stress between the two leads to this hallucination, which in the 70s was called stagflation. The stagnation was we moved from industrial hardware world into an instant software world which can't be measured, owned, or bought, or sold.
Uh-huh.
And in the interface between that and the money measurement, the dollar inflates in the gap.
Yeah, well, if it has infinite mass, it has no value whatsoever. I mean, you can't measure infinite value.
That's why you can lose $1 trillion and it doesn't matter.
Hmm. But there's still the illusion that there's X multi-trillion dollars floating around in the electric environment.
That's the sensory impact collectively. And what I call a meme. We still have the meme, the after image of previous technological environments, including visual space.
Hmm.
And then the Android meme is the automated presidential surrogate, which is a superlative supernova collapsing on itself, known as a nobody. You could substitute this phrase, the automated presidential surrogate is a superlative nobody. That's a good description of the Android meme.
Hmm. Well, so... I pointed out that I think I can trust the local news and the integrity of the local journalists, but then when you get to the top, it's all managed or whatever. Well, at the local level, a dollar means something.
Yes.
I mean, it means something to me, but as you go up...
you have four bodies. It means locally, chemical body, it means something, but you've got a couple other bodies, and that's why you end up out of a job, sitting on the street, because your TV body can't be translated back into the chemical body.
Well, I have a a job, and lots of people do, and jobs are moving around, and some are leaving the country, and like that. So I'm not quite sure what you're saying there.
Well, no, you have a job, but you don't have the security that people had 30, 40 years ago. They had a job, and they did it in that community.
Well, all because right? information is moving around, and jobs are made up of, you know, I mean...
Temporary holograms, temporary movie structures, like Hollywood back sets.
Right.
The thing is that you don't have a job, you have a role. And that role has a ground, and that ground can shift any day. And it is shifting all over the place. So you don't have the stability. So you have anxiety. So you got to take Valium. You got to take Prozac. You got to do all kinds of things to give a sense of stability to your chemical body.
Well, I'm not sure how what you're saying relates to the way I view it. And the way I view it is that there's, whatever it is now, 5 or 6 billion hungry mouths on the planet all competing for resources. And since my job now can be exported because I work in electronic technology, it can go to some other hungry mouth someplace that's willing to do it for less money. And so that's where my insecurity about my job goes.
Yeah. So
that relates exactly.
10 million other people.
Yeah.
Or more. Yeah, that's the situation, is that your chemical body is marginalized, and it doesn't have... A square zone to feel protected in.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fluid and subject to shifts and the rug being pulled out at any point.
Yeah.
And then that's created an anarchic situation for social life in all over the world, but especially in the United States and Europe. So chaos is the norm.
Well, it sounds like from what you're saying, if I were to experience my TV body, I would experience myself at infinite light speed, infinite mass. I'd have no boundaries. That sounds like Satori to me.
Yes, and you know how people do it? They take heroin. As McLuhan described in his review of Burroughs in 64, he said Burroughs prefers junk, heroin, over LSD, because LSD just gives you consumer images. But with junk, you can put on the whole universe instantly. And that's a good description of what happens when you're on heroin. And that's why heroin took over, cocaine took over, and Leary's move around LSD fell by the wayside, because the digital TV and chip body effect that the drug was miming could be best approximated by heroin, where you instantly put on the whole universe. And you interpret that as Satori.
Mm.
It's the same feeling.
Yeah. Putting on the whole universe, what does that look like?
Yeah, well, just think about it. Do you ever take an LSD? Feels like you're putting on the whole universe. But then heroin is a more intense experience of that, and less imagery, I imagine.
Mm.
So you're not mediated through imagery. You're just immediately having a very inflated experience.
Yeah. I don't know how the people who think about these things think about heroin, but I know they think about LSD as being boundary dissolving.
Yes, yeah, and that's an early. They're all. It's like the telegraph, whereas heroin is television.
Mm-hmm.
The various marijuana. You could say marijuana is the telegraph. LSD is TV. Cocaine is a computer, and. Heroin is the satellite digital Rumpelstiltskin feeling.
Well, that's interesting. But fewer people dare to tread that ground because it's dangerous. Heroin's it's very powerful, but I think it's probably the least used of the drugs you just mentioned.
It may be in suburban realities, but there's it's used all over the world. Probably the major drug.
Really? I know it's the one that people appear to be most addicted to once they develop an addiction.
Yeah, and then you have the drug ecstasy and those synthetic drugs, which are like more like the Android meme. If we say junk is a satellite, the Android meme is all those weird semi-synthetic, wacky rave drugs, which are made by chemists and have particular effects.
Well, now, are you referring to the Android meme as being the synthesis of the other?
Yes.
Yeah.
Remember, once you have the satellite, that's the end of the extension process. You've extended the whole planet. Then the technology takes on a life of its own and replays the whole history of human extensions, and that's the Android meme.
So, and the Android meme is sort of an upgrade of the term mixed corporate media?
Yes.
The next logical step?
Yeah, mixed corporate media would be my term for the Android meme in the late 80s, early 90s. But I would say mixed corporate media is more under the satellite global theater, the beginning of merging, because the digital effect from 1960 on is the beginning of bringing them together and making them one node. So in the transition from the satellite to the Android meme, you have the mixed corporate media. So mixed corporate media is early, incomplete versions of the Android media.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have the 90s, and the user-friendly digital Netscape browser internet world, that's the whole history of technology replayed as an invisible, friendly environment that you control.
Mm-hmm.
During the mixed corporate media phase, you still were semi-controlled. Maybe the cable TV phase, the 80s phase, personal computers, that was that phase of still dealing with bigger environments but that are clunky and not as manageable as the 90s media could do for you.
Mm-hmm. Focusing attention on this last quote again about Henry Kissinger, seems to be the current trigger man in the planetary game among the intervals of first, second, and third and fourth worlds. First world being industrialized West, second world being Russian socialism. Third, the non-industrialized lands, and fourth, the electric world that has gone around the rest. What is the describe the interplay between the first, second, and third worlds as it was affected by the fourth world, the electric world going around the three? What was the interplay between the first three worlds that happened as a result of the fourth world, the electric world surrounding the first three worlds?
The electric world, beginning with the telegraph, so really gets going with the radio environment. So it affected the first world in 1929, all right?
Mm-hmm.
It affected the second world, which is Russia, Stalin's paranoia in relation to the world during World War II and after, and also in the 30s when Stalin killed millions of people, 30 million people, whatever it was. So you can see that... The crisis for the first world was expressed by the economic crash, the effect of the electric world on the second world, Russian bureaucracy and Chinese bureaucracy, would be the Cold War paranoia and its own massacre of its citizens. The effect of electric media on the third world is the 70s and 80s with the death squads and the dictatorships, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth world is the electric world causing those first three crises. First three worlds crises, and then the chip body causes a crisis for the electric world. And that's what we call virtual reality, and all that's happened since the 80s, the Blade Runner world we've come into.
Mm-hmm.
Blade Runner expresses the effect of the chip body and its supreme immobile of inflation on the fourth world.
Hmm.
Get that?
That's hard to get. That's interesting.
Well, think of Enron. Enron played with utilities.
Oh, yeah. Interesting, yeah.
So the pleasant electric world of the 60s and 70s is a utopia compared to where we're at today in a lot of threads. And that was caused by what went around the fourth world, the fifth world.
Mm.
And the fifth world is on my chart, the Android meme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can't really call it para electrical, though. I mean, the chip body is still electrical, but it's a new reorganization of the electric world.
Yes, where it's interactive. It's organic. It's like talking to somebody.
Mm. Yeah.
It gives you control over what you want to do.
Yeah.
With the electric, huge electric environment.
Yeah.
Where and that creates great social fragmentation for the chemical body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's end with that.
Okay.
Unless you want, you got a final statement?
Yeah, no. Actually, one thing, because I jotted down a note. You said, "What does the chip body need?" And then we said, "Reality TV." And I was wondering, well, why does the chip body need reality TV?
No, no. need, did you say?
Yeah, I think that's how you put it.
Yeah,
earlier on.
Yes, reality, we say reality TV has changed the TV body, TV landscape. It was a new paradigm shift in the industry, you know, 7-8 years ago. I mean, it started in, what, MTV in 92, but it became a mass movement with the, a mass effective with Survivor in late 90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
2000. Okay, reality TV is a figure for ground. The ground is that the chip body was starting to become superseded by the post-chip world, which is represented by the Bush era. Therefore, the TV world, an older world, older than the chip body, would be affected.
Mm-hmm.
So the effect of the chip body on the TV body and the effect of the post-chip body on the chip body and on the TV body is the series of rippling, ricocheting effects on these different bodies. Reality TV is an expression of that.
Mm.
The idea of reality TV.
Mm-hmm.
And without going and take too long to go into it, reality is what I call on my chart the anthropomorphic physical. It's an attempt to express the first nature, which can't be done by media. But it's media fantasizing that you've reached the post-second nature media world and you've landed on Earth. And the whole metaphors are, take them out into some wilderness jungle and put them through some caveman stresses like we imagined cavemen lived before we had technology, so to speak.
Right.
Even though it's hard to determine when we didn't have technology because, you know, speech is a technology. And whatever shelter, clothing, the fire that they invented back then, that's still second nature. But the very primitive thing we've come to now, the image of primitive paleolithic conditions, is the feeling responding to the post-chip body or the post-last phase of digital electronic communication, which was a chip body. We're post that, so we're back in reality.
Mm-hmm. And what is the technology that describes post-chip body? The interplay between the chip body and the previous bodies?
Yes, and that interplay created a panic in the 90s, an ecstasy, a schizophrenia, hysteria, and paranoia, all on my chart. X-Files would be the paranoid part. The race to the end of the century and the idea that Y2K was going to happen and the chip body would collapse and all hell would break out because we wouldn't have that medium structure anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So people were preparing, you know, survival modes. They were preparing for reality TV scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it didn't happen, Y2K didn't collapse, meant, paradoxically, ironically, that there was no chip body anymore. If there was, it would have collapsed. But it had collapsed by 1990. And the 90s were just an afterimage of the chip body. So anyways, without going into the complexities of what I just said, by the year 2000, you can't have any communication happen. It's post-communication world, post-chip body world. And so you have an election that is canceled and imposed like a paleolithic tribe or clan. And you've had non-communication since then.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm trying to express. Now, we have all these media that are here, and these structures are here, but the accumulated effects of them have led to a mood of paleolithic retrieval.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've got one caveman fighting the other caveman.
Right.
That's called the War on Terror.
I don't think it's fair to say that the chip body didn't collapse during Y2K because it had already collapsed in the 1990s. I mean, we were facing a real dilemma with respect to computer technology, which was that the clock, the date system within that had been embedded into the computer chip,
yeah,
was not fashioned to be able to handle the digits required to
be accurate to the present.
Well, the chip was architected to be able to handle dates up through 1999, when they when they were.
I knew all that, so we know that that's the problem. That was visual space. That was.
No, I'm just saying there was a real crisis that needed to be managed, which was these chips needed to be managed so that they could handle going from 1999 to 2000.
Right.
And that was handled because people went to work and handled it. But I don't think it's fair to say that it didn't crash because it had already crashed in 1990.
Okay. The reason it was solved is that many corporations in the 96 to 99 period bought the new corrected computers. It caused the dot-com boom, huge sales of computers.
Oh, right.
Many corporations I was in touch with said, you know, we got all these new computers. You know, we hope it doesn't collapse, but it should work.
Right.
That's where all the sales happen.
Right.
So there was a disease. And some people conspiratorially say they created this problem so they could sell all the computers. And that may or may not have been true. But it's probably puny compared to the fact that there was a rush on the chip body. There was a sense of something's going to happen, we better correct it.
Mm-hmm.
And they corrected it. And then once it was sold, the market was saturated, and there was nowhere more to go.
Yeah.
So it crashed in April 2000.
Yeah. We think of how long it's taken to saturate the car market, and the car market's probably never been saturated. But the chip body, which operates at the speed of light, they were able to saturate it, and zippo, boom.
Right. So to the level that it's so ephemeral and transient and like a bubble, it comes and goes real quickly. That is what the 90s were compared to older, slower building environments. And so the digital environment started to peak around late 80s with, what was the term they used? Networking computers, I think it was. But when you brought in the graphic and the Netscape browser and then the millions of improvements from that point on, 94 on, it just escalated, and any point along that route, the computers were good enough. But they are going to be refined holeopathically and perfected on something that never needed to be done. Because the only benefit of the situation now is information apathy.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That's another story. We got to stop this session today.
Yeah. Well, we just have a few minutes left on the tape. Let me just bring up one more thing, and then we'll round this tape off. I noticed that, I heard that in Mexico, they had an election like we did here that was so close that they couldn't determine the winner. I thought that was an interesting cascading effect that it happened here, and a delayed reaction had happened in Mexico. I was wondering if you had any comments about that.
No, just that I like the phrase that Croker uses, we clone our societies. So what happens in America gets replayed in other cultures because the laws of media are always the same.
Mm-hmm.
You get to a certain level of technological development, the effects will be the same regardless of what culture is using them.
Mm-hmm. I would think the odds of a population being so polarized that they can't actually determine the outcome of election when you have so many millions of people voting, it doesn't seem plausible. That it should happen twice almost sounds like it was architected.
Yes, but look at it this way. With the computer, I can talk to anybody in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not everybody, but a lot of people, more than any normal human scale social life that anybody had up to this point. Mm-hmm. I can interact, email, and communicate ESP almost face-to-face with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all looking at someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Edward Teller's dream, this nuclear nightmare dream where he saw in the future each one of us would be in a lineup, and then we'd be walking towards another lineup, and each one of us would confront one person and have to fight them. That was his image of nuclear war, the end war or something, apocalyptic war, Armageddon war. We have that with email. So the translation on the larger communication scale that we don't fully understand between humans and other media, since we haven't been able to measure all effects, can come down to 50-50 elections. It's a standoff between me and you, me and anybody.
Mm.
Because we all have access to the same information, so nobody knows more than anybody else,
mm.
in collective terms.
Mm.
So there's going to be a 50-50 standoff more and more under Android mean conditions.
Yeah.
And it's the chip body. It's not the Mexican chemical body that's running around for whatever issues it thinks it's voting for. Mm-hmm. It has to confront the effect of the chip and TV body overlay the chemical body voting process, and that will cancel out the chemical body motives and goals and end up with a 50-50 yin-yang of nothing being able to find anything different.
Well, after all, the chip body works on ones and zeros, so it's the ultimate dialectic.
Yeah, the same thing. There's only a one. You say there's a zero so that you can pretend there's something else, but that there is no other, just like George Bush has no other. That's why there's nothing for him to say and speak to. And that's what the internet world leads to. We're all canceled out, and there's no other to translate ourselves into. And that's translated back into chemical body terms as a 50-50 standoff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that comment you just made about Bush is kind of provocative. I don't quite grasp it, but there's one.
Well, Bush doesn't communicate, right?
Yeah.
That's because you can't translate the post-information society into anything else. He's a zero that has no one to translate. If you do agree that he can translate to a one, that's him.
So all the press conferences that he gives is just treading water and
he's talking to himself. And the general consensus I hear it on New York media is that he's in a fantasy world. Began with Reagan, but they say that this guy he's not registering what's going on. He still thinks that we won the war and we're doing well in Iraq, blah blah blah. But all the other older media translate it into their old context, and they think there's
he prances around with his chest puffed up and like he's going to maintain the image of I am the president, I'm the decision maker.
Yeah.
He props up that image that he is somebody, and maybe he believes he is, and he really isn't.
His image is believable, because